In terms of climate tech, we are best on the planet. And so this for it's even crazier. We have the highest spendings in climate tech R&D than anywhere in the world. On EU level only, we have this Horizon Europe program where more than 33 billion euros will be invested into climate tech R&D until 2027. We already had Horizon 2020, more than 50 billion euros invested. That's only on the EU level. And then we have more than 100 billion euros invested each year from national budgets from Germany, France, Italy, Spain, etc. This leads to patent applications in the climate tech space. 28% of the patent applications come from Europe. We have the leading institutions, universities when it comes to climate tech, around a third. And we have most climate tech startups. This all leads to Europe being number one. We talked about battery startups. Between 2019 and 2021 in Europe, 103 battery startups were founded. And if you combine US and China, it's 18. So we're number one. But then when it comes to funding, we suck.
Welcome to Let's Talk Change. Human history is a long series of adaptations to disruptive change. The impact of innovation and scalability of today's technologies is powerful. They either deteriorate or improve living conditions on Earth. In this podcast series, we sit down with decision makers, innovators, experts, and visionaries to discuss how technologies, business innovations, policies, and improved communication can drive the change we need to amplify sustainable behavior in business and politics, for the benefit of the people and the planet.
My name is Doreen, and today we take a little deep dive into the area of venture capital. To be precise, in the area of climate tech venture capital. My guest today, Daniel Visevich. Daniel is one of the founders of the World Fund, which today is one of the largest climate tech venture funds in Europe. Daniel and I talk about the opportunities that are out there for investors in the climate tech space. We talk about solutions and the technologies that are desperately needed and need funds in order to tackle the climate change. We talk about the difference of the US and the European market when it comes to investments in the space of climate tech. And we talk about the role of female founders in the area. Hi, Danielle. Thanks for joining us at the Let's Talk Change podcast. Really happy to have you. And today we will talk about, obviously, your World Fund that you created with Tim and Christians and others. But also, I wanted to talk to you about the TED Talk you just held recently and go in more details about the venture funding impact seen in Europe. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me, Doreen.
So let's dive in right away. You held TED Talk. How come and what was the topic of it?
So yeah, the main topic is that we have to reconstruct and basically we need to disrupt venture capital. We have a huge climate crisis, the biggest crisis humankind ever had in front of us. And if you dig deeper only for like an hour or two, you will understand that the consequences of what is happening on our planet, they are catastrophic for all life on Earth. And we have the capital to solve it. We have the capital to tackle the climate crisis. We have the technology. We have the brilliant founders. But the capital is not directed in the way where it's needed to solve the biggest crisis on the planet. And it's even more frustrating when you understand that it's a huge investment opportunity. So you can generate superior returns if you invest into climate tech, more returns than if you invest in e-commerce platforms, for example. But it's still something that, especially in Europe, our investors didn't understand. So I talked about it.
I totally agree with it. And I've been following this trend for a while that basically there's investment money missing or at least not being invested in, especially also hardware. But we need hardware, especially when it comes to climate change and really hardware solutions, you know, in the energy, circular economy field and wherever else. But why do you think that is? I've asked the questions numerous times to startups, to, you know, ventures, and so why are you not investing in hardware? And mainly the question is, well, it doesn't accelerate as quick as a software does. What is your experience in that?
Definitely huge hesitancy towards hardware. So when you say we need hardware to solve the climate crisis, that's true, absolutely true. But what we need most is a reduction of the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And when it comes to this, hardware plays a crucial role. So what we at the World Fund do is always asking the very first question, is this technology we want to invest in able to save at least 100 megatons of CO2 or equivalent emissions per year? And I would say half of the solutions are hardware. The other part is also very much software driven. So we are super opportunistic when it comes to investing into those climate tech solutions. We want to have as much climate return, as we call it, for every euro invested as possible. And yes, hardware plays a crucial role. So the biggest levers are in hardware. Maybe to give you a positive example, definitely Tesla and a brilliant co-founder and entrepreneur like Elon Musk. They disrupt. You can say a lot about him and the company, and not everything is positive. But this hardware company is a typical example for a climate tech company. So it needed a decade or even more to get where it is. It takes longer, but the potential is huge.
Absolutely agree. I think Elon definitely disrupted the whole car industry and the way we think about it, and especially also in Europe, I think. But again, this is an example of it's an American company. Can you name a few European companies that have really risen in the last few years in the climate tech space and disrupted really? Which ones are those in your opinion?
The biggest example, of course, is Northvolt battery producers. And this is a positive.
They came from Tesla.
Yes. Correct. That's a very positive example where billions were already invested. But I love to also mention smaller companies that will become the most valuable companies of the next decade, as we believe, like, for example, SpaceForge. SpaceForge is a Welsh company that is building platforms that are able to build semiconductors in space. And only recently, there was the news that they will already start with it this year. So it's really cool that for the first time ever, a rocket will be launched from UK soil into the orbit with SpaceForge, so-called ForgeStar, and the first semiconductors will be produced in space with a much higher productivity, with less energy you need to produce it. Like when you want to produce semiconductors, you have to basically generate the conditions in space on Earth, and that's energy intensive. So this is one company that will disrupt, and it has a hardware component. And another one, Coa company. Full disclosure, we invested in SpaceForge and in the Coa company. They developed the Cocoa bean in the lab. Zara and Max and their team.
Can you explain Coa a bit, like just for everybody who hasn't heard about it?
They're Munich based. And what they do, it's a precision fermentation platform that has basically rebuilt all the ingredients that a cocoa bean has. And they're producing chocolate now. And the problem with cocoa is that 95% of the cocoa produced on the planet, and the demand is increasing, rainforests are cut down for it. Then in monoculture, cocoa trees are planted. And too often also children are used as labor. If we produce a product or a chocolate or a cocoa bean, and then the Nestlés of this world have a alternative that is cheaper, tastes the same, and has the same ingredients like the cocoa bean, they won't cut down rainforest anymore. That's what we hope, and they will use Coa. So this is something what's also hardware related. They need a lab, a huge lab they found in Munich. To be honest, this was a bottleneck, and we are so happy that they found a lab where you can really work on the receipt and produce the output. It's not an app, so you really need more than just an office. And yeah, so VCs sometimes are hesitant, but also history has shown that performance is much better. So I can give you more examples, but I see you want to ask the next question maybe.
So we talked about everything you did at the World Fong and where you're investing and how you're investing and, you know, what your basis is for it. But what is your own personal motivation? Because you're coming, as I mentioned in the beginning, you're coming more from a communications background, similar to me. You were a journalist a long time, and now you're running Europe's biggest clean tech VC. So how do you get there? And what is your motivation actually for that?
The motivation is, and it sounds a bit pathetic, is just my love to humankind. I think we people are just fantastic. We're brilliant. But we are living in a system where we don't bring the best out of us far too often. And in fact, there was this year, 2018, Fridays for Future, those young women that went on the streets. And although I'm a member of the Green Party in Germany for more than 20 years, I only then understood about the consequences of the climate crisis and how severe it is and what deep trouble we are. And so having worked before as a journalist, I thought about going back to storytelling. I was working at Project A 2018, super successful venture capital company. Basically, all of them are friends, super relevant advisors, Florian Heinemann and many others. So basically, it was the perfect place to work, to learn fast. But still, I knew I have to do something about the climate crisis. Going back to storytelling, I knew it's just passive. You can inspire people, but it's too passive.
And to be honest, there are quite enough people out there who do good storytelling already. So, I mean, it's good to have others, but I think the space was a bit full already.
It is, yeah. And others maybe do it better than I. The second thing was I was working for Angela Merkel for 5 years from 2012 to 2017. And it was so much learning. I really learned a lot and built a political network that is also very valuable for me and for us today. But I also learned that Angela Merkel, she really got the climate crisis. She really got the consequences. She knew what we are And still,
but she was limited in her ability to really push for things, right? Politically,
she couldn't realize the politics basically that she wanted to do in terms of tackling the climate crisis. And it's many reasons, but maybe the main reason is, of course, you have to have your party behind yourself. And this was very, very hard for her to get. And I was a bit disappointed here with the potential of politics. So I learned, don't wait for politics. I learned storytelling others can do better, and it's too passive. And the third thing I had and have is this network of investors, network of founders. And luckily, Tim Schumacher, I know him for 25 years, and Ecosia on our side, and Daria, and Craig Douglas. So it was a low-brainer to found the World Fund, because we also learned from the LP, from the investor side, they desperately are searching for investments into the climate tech space. And on the entrepreneurial side, the founders were increasingly better executors, not only those who want to save the planet, but those people who really come from the best universities, have really a track record as serial entrepreneurs, and they are now in climate tech. So the opportunity was huge. And I knew if we fill this gap with a fund, this would be the best thing we can do. And this for, yeah, we run the World Fund, and I'm driven by loving humankind and knowing that this is the biggest lever I have to help save our species and life on Earth.
It's a great story. And I'm hoping that you guys are very successful. And not only that, I'm really hoping that there will be others following your steps, that you will not stay, as much as I wish, you know, that everything goes well. But we need more bigger firms like yours in the climate field. So let's hope that also this crisis will lead to more venture funds and more risk takers and people who see what you see in terms of the need for really saving humankind and the planet. Maybe I want to ask you also about the age general trends that you see, or like the biggest sort of potential of saving CO2, like in which area you see that, and also which areas you as a World Fund mainly looking into in terms of investing, you know, which is interesting for a lot of startups who are probably applying for your funds.
Yes. And I would love to hear where you also see the most potential, because you, Doreen, and your people are in this space already for 20 years. So you are pros. So where we see the potential, and we base our insights a lot on the book that was published in 2017, the Project Drawdown book. And we are happy that Project Drawdown, Chad Frischman is one of our advisors. So in the book, 100 solutions are presented that will help us to reverse global warming. And they're mainly in two fields. It's the energy sector and the food, agriculture, land use sector. Basically, 100% of all human-made emissions are in those two sectors. So this is where we see the solutions. And when we decide where to invest, we do two things. So we have developed an assessment that's called the Climate Performance Potential Assessment, CPP assessment. We do two things. We look from top down and recognize technologies that have the potential to save 100 megatons of CO2 or equivalent emissions per year. And it's only 60-70 technologies that are really VC cases. So it seems like it's a broad field. It's only 60-70 technologies that have the potential. And then the second thing we do is life cycle assessment. So basically a bottom-up approach to, so to say, control if this potential is really applicable also with the second approach. So where do you see the big potential?
I agree with you on the agricultural and energy space. Those are the main areas. In the energy sector, I totally believe in also building up a regional European, let's say, value chain that saves a lot of CO2, for example, also when it comes to shipping things. I mean, look at the solar industry. I think you've been in the industry for long enough to also know that, you know, we've kind of missed out on that. We developed the technology, then it went to China. There are issues with whole industry behind the solar industry, basically generating the energy for producing those panels, the whole forced labor issue that we have with it. So it's, I really hope that we bring solar back to Europe. You know, there are tons of initiatives with Solar Power Europe and InnoEnergy and everybody. There's only one company right now, which is kind of in the spotlight, which is Meyer Burger. I really hope that we bring it back. We are right now in Europe, we're building the battery. You mentioned also the battery value chain. So I hope we are able to really place that here in order to also not just save transport costs, but to really have a sustainable industry from the CO2 lithium beginning with that also generates geothermal heat with which we can be independent again of the Russian gas. You know, it kind of solves more than just one problem. And to really have the factories here that produce on a sustainable scale the batteries and the cells that we need, because right now we're pretty much dependent in terms of the energy from outside and fossil sources in a way, right? So it's not an ideal situation. And if you switch to renewables, let's say, which we want to do, you know, Habeck just said we're going to go to 100% renewable by 2035. That's great. But importing 99% of panels from China is not the option or cannot be the solution, let's put it that way. That's my little two cents on this. But back to you, with the World Fund, which generated also a lot of buzz around Europe and the world, where do you see the uniqueness or the difference also to other venture funds that are out there? Like, where do you see yourself kind of in this whole space? Because Europe is full of venture capital. By the way, kind of a side note, I just read the other day that only 1.3% or something of venture capital goes into female-founded venture capital, which I find more than disgraceful. So I don't know how you go about also female founders. Maybe you can draw on that as well.
What we learned is that we are competing with the big American VCs. We differentiate ourselves to the traditional VCs in Europe, and it's mainly VCs that are not focusing very much on climate, like Maria Potenstik and where they invest. They don't have the tech team that we have. So we learned through the more than 2 years of research we've done while building the World Fund that one major reason why traditional VCs in Europe don't invest in climate tech or not as close as the amount as they could and should is that they don't understand the tech behind. So they understand business models, but they don't have the chemical engineers with the team, mechanical engineers, nuclear physicists, chemists, biologists, mathematicians. Basically, I named now our team. Our team consists of investment professionals who have huge venture capital experience, but all a scientific background. The second differentiator is also the size of our fund. So we have climate tech funds in Europe, but as you know, especially when hardware comes in, CapEx is higher. You need more capital. And that's the problem. That's why too many deals are lost. And that's the best case to American or Chinese investors, but too many deals don't even get funding. So we need, that's the reason why we are raising 350 million and we already have more than half of this capital committed. That's a good message, I can tell you. And only then we can follow on rounds. That's what we do when we invest. We take board seats, we try to get 10 to 25% of the company, and we try to reinvest in 2 to 3 follow-on rounds. It's also very smart for the fund model because only when you are able to go with the winners and not dilute can generate the returns an LP loves to see. Yeah, so we learned that we are not competing with the smaller climate tech VCs in Europe. We're not competing with the traditional European VCs. We are competing with the Americans who have deeper pockets.
Are they more risk-taking as well?
Yes, they are. But climate tech isn't as risky as it seems. Of course, venture capital is venture capital. But if you understand that we have to decarbonize and also the CO2 prices is rising. It's a no-brainer to understand that the CPP, as we call it, the climate performance potential, is an early indicator for superior returns. So our thesis is that those companies that will help us to decarbonize will be the most valuable companies of the next decade. So it's not how too many misunderstand it. Impact comes off the cost of profit. Error. If you have an indicator for greenhouse gas emissions reduction potential, you have an additional super relevant indicator for superior returns for the most valuable companies of the next decade.
But, and here comes my question. We in Europe, I would say, and I've lived in America for a long time, I know the American market really well. I would say, okay, besides Elon Musk maybe, but from a clean tech perspective, I think we have way more solutions and already working longer on solutions. Over here, we have a really good early stage funding system, you know, with all the kinks and the inner energies and everything that's out there. So there is a good ecosystem in Europe for that. And they're great solutions. You know, I mean, talking about Volocopter, you know, I can name you 20, 30 companies on a hydrogen scale. I mean, we're far advanced when it comes to hydrogen also. So we have the solutions, we have the brains, we have the engineering. Europe is like the home for engineering, you know, also Germany. Considering this, why is it that America is far advanced when it comes to the venture? Why don't the venture capital see that in Europe or the European venture capital? Why don't they see that potential like their colleagues do in America, when we have it in front of the doorstep? Is it regulation? Is it risk? What is the problem?
Let's cluster it maybe into 3 problems to give it a structure. And let us also not forget to answer the female question.
I will not forget about that.
So number one, of course, it's a cultural thing. We in Germany, compared to an American, are risk averse, period. So we're talking about this already for decades. If you fail in the US, you gained experience. If you fail in Germany, it's like, ooh, bad sign. Second, also in terms of regulations, pension funds in the US invest between 20, 30, some even up to 40% allocate their assets into PE and VC. In Germany, pension funds are like, I read a number, it's 0.1 0.18% of the capital pension funds have is allocated into VC and PE.
What do they do with the rest?
They invested conservative in stocks, in raw materials or gold. They invested into bonds. It's a mess. So the reason is also that PE and VC is like, of course, higher risk. And then you have to have more reserves. So you have to have a financial reserve because this is considered from the EC, from European Central Bank as well, and the regulation side on EU level even as more risky. And you have to have more reserves. So this is also a reason why pension funds, for example, hesitate. So it limits you. And that's the third reason connected to it. We have smaller funds. If you look at last year, for example, it was a success for Europe, but nearly half of the capital invested into European startups came from the outside, especially bigger rounds. We don't have the growth capital it's needed. So that's the problem we have in Europe. And I have to add some more numbers because what you said is true. In terms of climate tech, we are best on the planet. And so this for it's even crazier. We have the highest spendings in climate tech R&D than anywhere in the world. On EU level only, we have this Horizon Europe program where more than 33 billion euros will be invested into climate tech R&D until 2027. We already had Horizon 2020, more than 50 billion euros invested. That's only on the EU level. And then we have more than 100 billion euros invested each year from national budgets from Germany, France, Italy, Spain, etc. This leads to patent applications in the climate tech space. 28% of the patent applications come from Europe. We have the leading institutions, universities when it comes to climate tech, around a third. And we have most climate tech startups. This all leads to Europe being number one. We talked about battery startups. Between 2019 and 2021 in Europe, 103 battery startups were founded. And if you combine US and China, it's 80. So we're number one. But then when it comes to funding, we suck.
Well, we're good in the initial funding. But then, I mean, there are two examples that struck to me last year where I went, why do we let that happen? I mean, they're still in Europe, but Zonal Motors, the solar panel roof car, and I think it was Volocopter, both got their money in the US, not in Europe, because they couldn't obviously get the funding here. And that to me is, I mean, we need to change that. And I guess you guys are out there to change some of it. I know you can't change it all, but you at least set a precedent.
Yes, exactly. And I'm happy that you are mentioning this because we in Europe are always asked, why is first-time fund such a big fund? 350 million euros. You're crazy. You won't make it. Start small. And then the second fund. And then I tell them, okay, we luckily have a track record. What's really phenomenal. More than 70 investments done before World Fund multiple. If you look at the last 10 years, it's close to 9. So we ninefolded our investments. Then also we already had a portfolio. We had a significant up round. So we can make it because of the KPIs needed are here. And we have this huge investment gap. And we have a climate crisis that won't tell us, okay, true, be conservative, start small, we'll wait with all the consequences, the catastrophe, we'll take a break. No. And then in the US, we tell them about the biggest climate tech VC in Europe that we want to build with 350 million. You can see when American LPs hear that, they're like, are you joking?
What he's saying is start small is like, yet I think Elon Musk wouldn't have gotten as far as he got if he would have had that attitude of starting his company, right? So I think it's time to think big, which is a wording like recently, think big cases is kind of where Europe needs to get to, I think. And it's time to take some risk because quite frankly, we don't have time. I mean, we're at risk basically. So if you don't take any, there's a saying that I always like is what's the worst that can happen, right?
Yeah. And the worst that can happen is what is going to happen if we think small.
Exactly.
So whatever we do, I mean, it can only be better. And we have everything here, best tech, best companies, best people. We have the capital and we need many more world funds.
Do you really think that this crisis that we have right now on top of it, which is the war, will help us to accelerate in that space? Because we all of a sudden, we are aware of, you know, we're completely dependent. And if we don't change that ASAP, we're going to have an even more problem.
As bad as it sounds, this will help us for two reasons. One is pretty obvious. The second one is not so obvious. So the first one is what we are talking already a lot about. We see that depending on fossil fuels is depending on dictators. Fossil fuels are basically, it's not democracy. So that's something people more and more understand, that we have to shift sooner, much faster to renewable energy as we planned to. And the second reason that is not as obvious as the first, we have an inflation. We have growing prices. And at the same time, interest rates won't grow as fast as they maybe should, because of course, ECB, etc. have to care about the economy. So in what situation are investors getting now? If they invest in bonds, they don't make money. If they invest in stocks, difficult situation. So what I see coming is that they will need to invest in real assets, and it is PE and VC. So this will pour more money because it has comparably lower risk. It's adjusting towards more capital funneled into PE and VC and climate tech companies. That's not only what I hope, but I was also talking during the last days to a few bankers who have billions of billions assets under management. So I learned that basically from them, that they see also not only their customers, but themselves to go more into investing into real assets. Because if you want to generate a return, that's the most promising alternative.
So generally you say it's just going to help us. It's a bad situation right now, but in the long term, we will hopefully learn from our mistakes. Which brings me, sorry to, this is not a perfect lead into it, to the female question, because I'm a very maybe strong kind of very opinionated about it, but I think that the reason why we are in this situation now, not only climate change, but also the war and everything, is because, you know, we didn't really let women on the table for a long time. And if you look at it, thankfully it's changing, and thankfully the whole kind of industry is also slowly changing.
Is it changing?
There are people like you, there are other young or like new funks on the way, new leaders in the industry, all the clean tech founders, you know, they're kind of a different generation, I think. So I have hope, but I have a strong opinion on this, that the reason why we're in this situation is because men for a long time, white, old, kind of ruled everything, and women weren't allowed on the table, except maybe for Margaret Thatcher, but let's not count her in. I think we need way more women on the table. Also in the VC world. I mean, again, there was this stat out that only 1.3% of VC money goes into female-founded companies. And also the amount of women in VCs as partners is fairly low number. What is your take on this?
I agree with everything you said. Two things. One thing, yes, politics would also be much better if at least half of the leaders were female. I'm pretty convinced.
You see that with the new foreign minister, right?
I'm so happy that we have Annalena Baerbock now as German foreign minister. Really impressive how she's handling stuff now, and it's a role model for, I think, many. And yeah, first thing, politics. Second thing, the financial sector is male driven, male dominated, and I don't see the change here, what everybody's talking about. We are aware, and from year to year, more aware. But to be honest, I don't know why you think it's changing, Doreen, but you set the number. Last year in Europe, of the $120 million invested into European venture capital, European startups, 1.3% of the capital into female-led or co-female-led startups. It's incredible. And I can tell you from my experience, I mean, we built the World Fund right from the beginning. Daria Saharova is one of our co-founders, besides Tim and myself and Craig. There's Daria. She's part of the team since day one. And we want to strengthen our team with another female partner, or at least principal. And, you know, the thing is, if you look at the numbers, the male investors have better track record. That's what the people look at. And why do they have? Because female investors don't get the chance. So it's a problem that persists. And only if you really, I don't know, quota is something what's difficult, but we need quota. We won't be able to change it the other way. We need to have more female investors, more female founders. And if only men are deciding where to put money, it will stay as it is, and it stays as it is. So we on purpose declined more than 10 potential partners, promising track record, super people, just because we are on purpose searching for a female or a diverse partner.
I wasn't a fan of the quota when it first came out, because I was like, you know, you have to prove with your ability, but I changed my mind over the time because it's just not changing as much as it should. And what I'm trying to get at is, don't we just need to have another culture in the whole VC area, like where we go, everybody should be impact driven. Everybody should look like, okay, it's totally okay to have the return maybe 5 years later than if I invest into another e-commerce platform.
I'm, to be honest, here pretty much capitalistic, and venture capital wouldn't be venture capital if you would be like, let it grow slower. In other sectors, it's applicable. When you have a company that is already listed, I think the point also you want to make is, don't do everything just to increase the profit. Care for the long-term profit. This is something where I totally agree. But at the start, in venture capital, a company needs to grow fast to scale. It's difficult to apply it here.
Yeah, okay. I can say, oh, that's totally fine. It's maybe my thinking that I think maybe we should change a bit of the thinking. My thinking is for many years we had this massive growth, but where did it get us?
That's another point. I agree totally. We don't need sports utility vehicles and Berlin Mitte and those big cars. And just because people have more and more wealth and more money and you won't be happier. We talked about it before the podcast when we talked about Tim and Christian who
made a good example.
Ecosia in 2018. Ecosia nowadays would be a unicorn, but they gave away their shares of Ecosia to a Stiftung, to a purpose company, basically because they know that they won't be happier people if they earn millions and billions here, because what they want is Ecosia to thrive, to plant more trees. Ecosia is the biggest search engine in Europe, on a side note, and the profit is mainly invested into planting trees, but also they are our anchor investors. They invested 10 million upfront in the World Fund, so I'm very grateful to them. So they only invest into really deep green stuff. And so I'm happy that Ecosia is growing and has grown exponentially. But what you're talking is this other thing where I can also see it with people working for funds that invest in stuff that is just there to grow and generate profit and have no purpose. And those people become rich. And honestly, they don't know where to put the money in. That's why you need bigger cars, bigger apartments, bigger whatever. Here, growth is unhealthy and makes people more unhappy.
That's the perfect last sentence, Daniel, for our podcast. We're out of time, but thanks so much for all your insights. I'm sure we'll talk again when you have more assets in your World Fund and you can introduce us to all the great solutions that you guys invested into. I'll be happy to talk to you again and get sort of an experienced review, like from maybe another year or something. That would be perfect. Thanks so much for your time and talk to you soon.
Looking forward.
Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you'll join us next time on Let's Talk Change. We are proud to be powered by DWR Eco, an international cleantech consultancy for business strategies, communications, and public affairs.